Call the meeting to order. It is 5:35. Item number 2 on the agenda is the approval of the legal action report and the meeting minutes from our meeting that was hosted at Ward 6 on July 18th. Did you have an opportunity to read the LAR and the meeting minutes? Oh, sure. Let's do a roll call. Sorry.
No problem. I'm Dalia.
Present.
She's present via Teams.
Keith Calhoun.
Present.
William Ricketts.
Present.
Michael Lynn.
Present.
Okay, thank you. So item number 2, approval of the LAR and the meeting minutes from July 18th. So Martha will move to approve and Jaime will second.
Aye.
Annabelle, can you hear us? Did you approve?
Yes.
Thank you. Aye.
William Ricketts?
Yeah.
Martha Lynn.
Aye. Okay, so report from the chairperson. Just kind of housekeeping. We have restrooms out these doors, and we've got some bottled water over in the corner. So an official welcome to the Tucson Convention Center. I would like to make mention that we received notification today from the city clerk's office, and they've made some changes to the city ordinance, specifically with boards, committees, and commissions. For those boards, committees, and commissions that are within Category 1, which CPARB is within Category 1, there are new rules, and there's flexibility to the quorum requirements. So, for example, if we have five appointed members, we only need 3 members for a quorum. So this was effective August 8th, 2023. Happy to have the clerk's office send you documentation if you'd like that. Okay. And then another... So item number 4 is a call to the audience, and at this time the community may address the board with their concerns. The board, however, may not address the specific concerns at this meeting. The board will, at its discretion, make it a future agenda item, at which time it can be discussed, and the community members are asked to address the board, not a specific member, and each person is limited to 3 minutes. The camera is here, so if there's anyone in the audience that would like to address the board, if you can stand in front of the screen, that would be great.
Do you want me to stand or may I sit?
You may sit.
Thank you. My name is Richard. I am a resident of the city of Tucson. I am in Councilman Richard Femer's area, specifically to TPD. I'm in Team 1, Beat 6. So for historical perspective, I should tell the commission, I worked for FEMA County for 23 years at a multitude of assignments, including serving the felony warrant in FEMA County. So I have a very diverse background, though granted it was in the 70s, 80s, and 90s up to 2000. So I want to share with that. I spoke to Mitch Kagan about the possibility of donating my time. I did some research. I attended your last meeting, and I have some concerns I want the commission to share with all of you. The first one, and I shared this specifically with Mitch, I was concerned with the relationship of commissioners to officers. We, the public, need to make sure that you are fair and impartial. So you can't attend an event of the union, you know, just like a judge can't, because you are really in a position where you're judging. So I was a little concerned with you, and I just want to make sure that the commission is aware of that. The second thing I saw that really did take me for a loop and made me angry is when a command officer said, Well, the county attorney didn't prosecute him. You were there. You heard it said. That's not what's being discussed here. And I would warn Uniform that if that's the case, this is the wrong venue to trash our county attorney. If you want to do something about it, do it at the poll box, right? And I know your chief professionally, and I know the county attorney professionally. I know that they can sit down as two people and work things out if there's a real serious problem. The next thing I wanted to share is we have a system, as you know, that's adversarial. You got the state, which would be the county attorney, and you got the defense, right? And here, one of the things that took me for the loop, and I told you, Madam Chairman, is you actually used names. You named somebody who was arrested, and then you named the officer. And there was some disparaging marks about both. Somebody said, is he still working for us? And I thought, wow, what kind of officer are we talking about? And the person that we're talking about had been arrested a multitude of times. So I would warn this commission that if you're going to call people by name, and if you're going to refer to an officer by name, then you should invite them. Defend their honor, their word, their something, right? If they don't show up, that's okay. I was like, wow, really? We just did an event with naming people by name? The other thing I wanted to talk about, and I'll end with this plus a closing marks. What's the demonstration that we had? Okay? I was a detention officer in the late 70s. By the way, it was not called like it is today. It's called the jail, right? We were detention officers. Today, I think they call them CSOs or whatever they call them. Different world, right? But I worked in that capacity. When I saw the restraining devices, I want to ask the commission this, a couple of things. Where's the instructions from the people who produce it? I didn't see anything that talked about limitations, things that could go wrong so that you would be aware. Because they made this. We should know that. The community should know that. And you should know that when you look at these things. The second thing I didn't see was a TPD policy that says when you use it, how you use it, what the process is. I did ask a question, and I think, I can't remember who it was, is there an age limit? Somebody asked that. I remember who it was, right? And my concern was there's, of course, the court, and there's also the public court. What happens when you wrap up a 10-year-old? Right? So I'm going to close by saying this. 3 minutes is nowhere near enough time. If you really want to hear from the community, I'm very well versed in Robert's Rules of Order. I ran for the Pima County Board of Supervisors. I'm very well versed. The chair can allow more. But there are a lot of things that I think that this commission needs to look at. We need to be fair, impartial, and look at everything before you make a choice, because you affect somebody's career in uniform, or you affect somebody on the public side, whatever you decide. And I know you don't get paid and all of that stuff, right? And thank you for volunteering, but you must consider all options.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Stephen Moore. I'm a frequent call to the audience responder. Back in the day, they used to have 5 minutes, but I think I overstepped my bounds, and they cut it down to 3 minutes. And I've been told not to take it personally, but when you're the only one that usually speaks, it's kind of hard not to. But that's neither here nor there. Last CPUD meeting, what was the person I've been looking at?
The camera is here, okay, and your board is here.
Last CPUD meeting, I think, was the greatest CPUD meeting I've ever attended. It was so refreshing to have potential advisory members here. Never seen that before. What a giant step forward. And it's glad to see that they actually came back, which is good. Last week I had passed out a transcripts of an actual case back in 2013 about how poorly things were done back in 2013. Right. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, this is now 2023. Maybe I should be harping on what happened in 2013, 10 years ago, and maybe consider more about the present. So if you read the handout and you have any questions about it, you want to give me a call, talk about it, you want to send me an email or something, you've got my contact information right here on top. But I'm taking a page out of Mr. Higgins, from last month and passing out actual rules, and I hope the rules didn't change. One of the things that CPARP has been neglecting for years and years is the 48 hours of training. And I assume that's still in there? Yes. Okay.
Sorry,
so I guess once you get your initial training done right, that was a long time. Once you get that done, then you're supposed to have 48 hours, and it specifies what counts as training. And one of the things that counts is working on board committees. Now, I liked the presentation last month. I thought it was great. I thought the fact that our board president stood up or laid down whatever the case was and demonstrated, and that was great. I'm sure they do it. The academy, I'm sure they even struggle greatly. But there's no way you're going to replicate an actual encounter, either here or at the Officers of Training Academy. So what I was thinking was, the board members need 48 hours. And, we don't want to see part of it every time. All they do is find every case declared and plural, and that's all they do. Oh, we reviewed 20,000 cases in the last 5 years, and every single one of them was fair and thorough. Now with body cams, I don't think you need all of CPARC looking at each case each month. I think you could came up with a committee of no more than 3 members, then the time that they actually spent reviewing the cases would count towards their training, where it doesn't count now. So I guess the point I wanted to make was it would be great if CPARC was to form a committee to do review the cases each month and also form other committees to do other things. And one of the things I'd like to see the committee do is actually review the video from when these restraints were used and see what it looks like. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else that would like to address the board? Okay. So item number 5, review of the TPD investigations. In accordance with Section 10A-88F of the Mayor Council mandate, the board may only review those charges specified in the investigation in order to comment on the fairness and thoroughness of the internal investigation and to report any concern regarding that investigation to those specified in the mandate. So the first case that we are going to review is case number 22-0067. The incident occurred on February 26, 2022. The complaint was received February 28, 2022. And this was in Operations Division South. Allegations included allegations regarding policies and procedures and failure to take supervisory action and another officer with regards to policy and procedures. The complainant and her daughter, who was interpreting the sign language, alleged that 88 allegations were violated. Would anyone like to comment on this case?
The only thing I have is pretty remarkable the extent that TPD went to try to accommodate a Spanish English family sign language interpreter, which of course wouldn't exist. And so, yay for the effort, and I don't get where the complaint's coming from because of the very unique situation of the matriarch. Deaf, illiterate, communicating with her was a huge challenge, and I see TPD made all the best efforts. That's all I got.
Annabelle, anything from you?
There's a lot to unpack in this case for me, and I feel like I needed to spend more time on it. I think my concern was the visit to the home of the person whom the complainant was advocating for, and this individual is the deaf individual, and some of the hello?
We can hear you.
Okay. It was difficult for me because I don't feel that the officer was quite listening to the questions that were being asked. The complainant was kind of coming back, and I believe the phone call was originally coming from the person who was in Las Vegas, and that was the daughter that was the advocate in this case. And so I think I'm very confused when the officer went to make sure that the individual was safe, that the officer didn't necessarily get the information directly from the individual. And that's what the complainant was trying to get at. So I think it's problematic. I just feel that the effort there was not in the best interest of the individual that was seeking the help. And there's so much more. I mean, there was a lot of video camera to review. We're talking a couple hours. And of course the case was another 400 plus page. And honestly, I've been ill and I wasn't able to get through all of it. So, I may not be able to vote on this case because I just don't feel comfortable without a thorough review of it.
Would anyone like to make a motion on this case?
I'll bite.
Thank you.
I move to find case 22-0067 to be found fair and thorough.
We have a motion. We have a second. We have a motion and a second.
Ms. Lavelle?
Aye.
And about Nunez?
No.
In Calhoun?
Aye.
And Martha?
Aye.
Thank you for the feedback. Okay, so our second case to review is case number 22-0252. The incident occurred on June 16, 2022. The complaint was made on the 8th of July, and this occurred in Operation Division East. And failure to investigate, rudeness, the complainant made a complaint against an officer regarding that the officer refused to look at the documents regarding an eviction, document regarding an assault. He indicated that the officer was rude and dismissive of her when she called to speak with him when they took the complaint. I don't know. Did I make myself clear? So there's two complaints. Open for discussion.
I got nothing on this one. Seems pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm. I think this one was straightforward for me in terms of the officer really trying to explain thoroughly what her options were and really relying with the process and giving the opportunity for the other individual to also be aware of what was being asked in terms of what could be done and making clear that there are certain things that the police officer couldn't do because it was not within his purview to actually do anything. So I did not see the rudeness that she may have experienced, in my humble opinion. So I also think that this one was pretty straightforward.
Penny?
I'll make a motion to make case number 220252 fair and thorough.
We have a motion from Jaime. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Nitaleo?
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez?
Aye.
Pete Calhoun?
Aye.
And Martha Lynn?
Aye. Thank you. Okay, with regards to case number 22-0316, this occurred in Operations Division West. Allegations include failure to investigate, rudeness, policies and procedures. The incident occurred on the August 3rd. The complaint came in on the 16th. The individual made a complaint to OPS with regards to officers failing to investigate the incident in which her brother's service animal was left without food and water for 4 days. Here's as if we had a couple of verbal counselings on this as well. Open for discussion.
So for clarification, the complainant, was she out of town?
Appeared to be.
Okay. She lives out of town. Not just temporarily out of town.
I didn't hone in on that particularly.
I believe it was. I think I read somewhere it was Virginia.
Okay. All right.
I will say that I feel the officer who made the initial contact did a really good job of sort of dealing with someone who was presenting in a way that read they could have been in distress. I mean, obviously there was some physical signs with the profuse sweating and sort of the behaviors that did not appear to be the individual did not have a cohesive sense of communication. And I really did appreciate how the officer was able to try to keep the individual calm. And called for the right, backup with calling, medical to come and take a look and knowing that there was a concern there. My question is, do they have to have the body worn camera on during transportation, to hear the individual and that conversation with the officer, the back and forth? Cause I feel like the camera was off for a little bit of a extended period of time.
Officer to respond?
Yes, they're required to have body cameras on while transporting.
Was that included in the counseling?
This was the teaching case, correct?
Yes, it is.
Wes.
Yes. My understanding was that the sergeant, heating, I believe it was, that spoke to them, did also include that information about the body for being on during the transport.
I mean, I think this was really complex because the expectation the complainant had was that they would have the information that it was a service dog and the information was actually in the billfold, it sounded like, for the individual. So how would one know to look for that there specifically? Is that something that TPD would do in that case? I would imagine they didn't necessarily know that it was a service dog. Is that correct?
That would be my understanding
as well. I'm sorry, can't hear.
Yes, we would normally not search a wallet for unknown instructions.
I was just curious, though, too, once I think that's what the individual was saying, like, over and over and over once he was in custody and taken to the location where he was being held, that he kept calling out for Biscuit. I have a little bit of love for Biscuit now, the dog. But sort of thinking of what that service animal would do for that person, is there sort of any kind of training from TPD to sort of recognize that at all? I don't know. I'm just curious.
There is specific training related to the fact about service animals, not necessarily that you would observe it by seeing any animal to the side, knowing that it's a service animal itself, and certainly not any sort of a transport of a service animal with another individual in crisis, especially in the point where it was to this level of crisis intervention.
Well, I appreciated sort of working with the individuals that did go out and sort of got the initial information too, and they worked together as a team to sort of compile the information. So I thought that was good. And I'll defer to others.
Is there a policy with regards to animals left in the house as you're detaining someone?
As long as we know that the animals are taken care of, often many times there are people who request that the animal be left at the property. I don't believe that was specific to this case, but I would say that's more common than not, because if you do transport the dog many times, or whatever the animal is, many times people are more encumbered because they have to go somewhere else to relocate and recover the animal at a later time. And so that's always been kind of the dynamic. But there are GOs, general orders, related to property if you have no one else able to watch it or that you don't believe the dog is going to be able to be maintained. For example, if you were arresting a person, say, for a violent felony, and you believe that person is going to be incarcerated, you could leave that dog inside the home. But if you were arresting a person or thinking they were going to treatment and possibly were returning the next day or hours after, that may be the decision that would be made, because you would want to transport the dog or have to wait for animal control to take custody of the animal and then have the person in crisis have to go back and get the animal later.
So in this case, Pima Animal Control would come and take custody, but you would still have PD there watching that transaction.
That is an option. You can call Pima Animal Control in certain cases. If they have someone available to respond and if they have some sort of an estimated time to respond.
Thank you.
Is the policy the same between the service animal, like an emotional support animal, like in this case, versus a service animal who's been trained and is there for a medical reason? Is the response the same, or what
happens? That's a great question. I'll be honest with you. I can't say that I know that firsthand. My understanding would be that each animal would be treated the same because it's more the safety of the animal, not based on the classification of the animal, where they could spend the night, if you will. But I can't speak specifically if there's any deviation about a service animal, because I will say that we made a community use the term service animal very differently than what is actually defined by ADA regulations and the trainings that are required. So I think that's where it deviates, that anyone can say it's a comfort animal versus a trained animal that wears a different vest or a different color.
So Jaime stepped out. Would anyone like to make a motion on this case?
Yeah, I would like to move that this case be considered reviewed as fair and thorough.
I'll second.
Metaleo?
No.
Annabelle Nunez?
Aye.
Kate Calhoun?
Aye.
And Martha Lynn?
Aye. So during our meeting in July, a request was to table case number 20-0428 for additional time to read the memorandum that was actually written by Chief Kazmar with regards to the directives on the outcome of this case. Did you read it? I mean, we are talking about case number 20-0428. That was from our meeting in July, and there was a request to continue to review the case and read the memorandum that was written by Chief Kasmar.
Yes, that was me, and I reviewed it, and I feel that this case was reviewed fair and thorough. And it was basically associated with the fact that the initial review had been it was had a different outcome, and Chief Kasmar reversed that, and I was just curious about that, and I had not seen that additional information yet, so I would put that forward as a form of a motion to consider this case reviewed fair and thorough, unless there's a discussion.
Want a second?
This was
want a second?
Yeah. One second. Sorry.
Okay, so we got a second with Jaime.
Jaime Taleo.
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez.
Aye.
Dean Calhoun.
Aye.
And Martha Lund.
Aye. No, that's fine.
Oh.
The one that's highlighted? Yeah, that's better. That's mine. Just so that you can read it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So item number 6, Tucson Police Department, in accordance with the provisions of the state open public meeting law, these items that are listed on the agenda in order to allow TPD to present a brief summary of current events pursuant to provision ARS section 38-431.02, the board may not propose, discuss, deliberate, or take action at this meeting on any matter in the updates unless specifically and properly noticed for legal action at a subsequent meeting. Chief Duffy.
Hello, I'm sorry, I'm doing this from home. I don't have any updates. Captain Reese and I talked about, because I know it came up with the last case, just a little bit of conversation about the general order and getting involved off duty. So I don't know if you want him to cover maybe a little bit more. We decided to stay away from specific cases, but just kind of talk about the plus and minuses of our current policy. And really saying that I do support, phone numbers being given and community members contacting officers, but there's got to be some provisions in place, like if they're off duty where they can call another officer, that way they have the proper tools. But we'll wait until we get to Captain Reese to kind of cover that. I don't know if you guys still wanted that or not. Him and I talked on Monday about just touching maybe on the plus and minuses of the policy, and then kind of the expectation, at least that I have, a lot of community members have officers' phone numbers, but if they're off duty, the expectation is obviously that they contact someone on duty, or if it's something that they can handle the next day, or, a minor question, something that doesn't require action, that they actually put someone on duty in place for that. And so I think Captain Reese is going to talk about, some of the issues getting involved on off duty, not in an on duty capacity, not having proper equipment, things like that, resources. Those are just kind of the things we were going to touch on if you still wanted that. And that is it for me.
I would say yes. More information is always helpful.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Annabelle. All right. Thank you, Chief. Yes, please.
As Chief W was mentioning, we talked earlier this week,
I know we talked at the last board meeting about the idea of maybe look at past cases where officers had been involved in off-duty incidents. In all honesty, when we start talking about, there's not that many that come across OPS's desk, except for when there's misconduct, if there's something that, or alleged misconduct, I should say. There are officers that will become involved off-duty in an incident, but there's no issues. We never hear about it. They may come back to work, tell their supervisor. Well, they will tell their supervisor right reports to do anything to do, but that's pretty rare. The times where they actually do things like that are when it's imminent, harming is a person, if there's an active crime going on and they're witnessing it. But there's a lot of decisions that go into that. And we talk about that with our young officers in the academy, things like if you're there off duty, do you have all the tools you need? Do you have your gun, badge, handcuffs? Do you have to, you may go catch somebody, but then what do you do with them if you don't have all the tools that you normally have? And then there's also things to think about too. Not only do you have your safety equipment, but you may be in a situation where you don't have all the equipment and you may be with your family. And be rather frank, if you're out there with your 5-year-old child, you are not going to be taking police action unless it is critically important that you do. And in that case, the argument would be maybe the safest thing is to extract yourself and that'd be a good witness to take your 5-year-old and keep that person safe. Those are things we talk about with our officers, and that's part of our training process along the way. So it's kind of rare that the officers off duty will jump in. Like Chief Duffy said, one thing we do encourage our officers to do is we give them all department cell phones. And for community members to have our numbers, for businesses to have our numbers, we encourage that. And we would actually, like that level of commitment from the community and from our officers to work together. But that being said, there comes into being problems where on an off-duty time where an officer may be off for whatever reason, on vacation or is on days off, they may get phone calls from the community member that they're reaching out on a lifeline thinking, I've got this officer on speed dial, but that officer may not be coming back to work for 3 days, and they may not be aware of that. So that's a level of, we want our community to be engaged with us, but we also need to be aware that sometimes if they're calling out, if it's an emergency, they need to call 911. If they need a police officer now, they need to call 911. If the officer's out working the beat or working that particular area, absolutely, then to call us. But there's a lot of things that go into that. There's no specific cases we could really digest, and kind of bring to the board to highlight any of that stuff. But we do have it occasionally, but there's a lot of thought process that goes into what we tell our officers to do. Any specific questions about situations or what's trained for officers?
Would a simple solution be changing the voicemail on the cell phone according, yes, I'm on duty. It's one voicemail. I'm off duty. Can't really do anything right now, but refer to someone who could help shy of 911.
And that's actually a good point. In fact, we have a lot of officers will have that in their voicemail. There's a little script that we've provided for the people to put out there that basically says, you've reached, Officer Mocatelli from the Tucson Police Department. If this is an emergency, hang up and dial 911. And then, fortunately, you reach this during my off hours or you reach this, I'm going to go get your phone. Call if you'd like to leave a message, feel free. We give them a little script, but we do tell them if it's an emergency, call 911 on the recordings. But at the same point, sometimes they may not get to the, they have 4 or 5 rings, they just hang up, they start either texting or trying to power call. But that's a very good point. That is, educating community members about this is a tool we can use, but it's just a tool. You gotta figure out the best way to use it.
Watching some of the training at the academy the last couple of weeks, nothing to be said for experience. Even at 11 weeks, they look really green. They're competent, but they're, they'll get more experience. I would want to.
That is one of the things we do tell our young officers when they're going through training is there's no substitute for experience. And that's why our training program is so long, because people get experience at different levels based on just the calls they go to. And you may have an officer that's in week 12 of training that's just a whole lot more than an officer that's in good training just because of the hours they work and just the calls they've taken. That's a very important.
I guess another concern if you have a recording that says I'm off duty right now, might that encourage criminality? As in, I'm going to call up as a suspect and say, hey, Target, And I get a recording that says, I'm not working. I'm off right now. I'm going to go out and dog, it's not on. I'm going to go out and do what I'm not supposed to be doing. So, but if I was a bad guy, I might take that and help me along. I just happened to pick that
check with me first.
I personally would be more concerned myself with having a voicemail confirming that I'm on duty, because then that means I'm not at my house.
Yes. That's exactly what I was saying.
And if somebody knows they're not at my house, and they're also going to know most likely this police officer has lots of guns in his house, and my family's not being protected by me right now, and I'd be concerned with that.
And this topic actually brings up a lot of things that we talk about with our officers, and that is, you know, personal safety, your safety at home, how you interact with the community. And it's just, it's a tough topic, and there's no shortage of times where experience matters, and you'll have seasoned officers that share those experiences and be like, well, actually, you know what? This is something else to think about. So it's tough. But at the same point, we found that there's a good balance for the most part for most of our officers, and we have a really good community connection, but also being safe about it.
Thank you. All right, so item number 7, Office of the Independent Police Auditor.
Thank you. Actually, a few things. I know Chair brought up under her opening argument, opening discussion about the new ordinance, and I passed out a copy of that new ordinance to everybody. You've all got that. Do you remember when you first started way back when I handed out that 3-ring thing to you guys? And I know you read it every night before you go to bed. It's cheaper than an Ambien. At any rate, add this, please, to that 3-ring binder. It's another piece of resource material. And just file it, because you'll never find it. But just find that book if you still know where it is and throw it in there, because it really does up there. A couple quick things about it. That you'll see is, for whatever reason, a clerk's office under boards and commissions will list you as under P, not under C for CPAR, but under Police Advisory Review Board, Community. I don't understand the logic, but that is what they do. So you'll see yourselves there as Police Advisory Review Board. Suffice it to say, under 10A140, that you are designated as a Category 1 board. And this will go into great detail about what 1 and 2 mean. You can look at that yourself. But if you look at 10A140 on page 3, under A, that's the page. Category 1. For CPAR, you are Category 1. Majority of the members currently appointed and serving shall constitute a quorum. So empty seats are not counting toward the number count. So if you have 2 openings, whereas before, if you missed 1 or 2 people, you were not going to make quorum. Now it's going to be a whole lot different. As you can see on page 3, there are a bunch that have been designated as Category 1. For those of you that have any questions, I'm sure it's a legal question. You have the city attorney here, Roy Lusk, and will certainly be able to answer any of your questions. Take a minute to look at that. Is everybody ready to move on? Up to you. And I'll direct you to page 3, and it's just pretty much the 10A140A, the opening paragraph. Everybody good with that? Okay. Next thing, I did not call Mr. Moore ahead of time to coordinate this, but it sounds like I did. I want to talk about some training as well. Form was created a long time ago by former Chair Perrin, and I think Annabelle, you may still have that form. You still have that form where you for training, logging in your training? Because as Mr. Moore pointed out, he is correct, that you are required to pursue 48 hours. It doesn't say you shall get 40 hours. It says you are required to pursue 40 hours. 48 hours, excuse me. So you're supposed to be keeping track of your own training hours and submitting that to the chair. And those hours are supposed to be reported to the mayor and council. So if you have not been doing that, please do that. Mr. Ricketts, your hours that you're doing right now, Bill, toward your 80 hours, that goes toward you. And you want to report those as well. Anytime you have a training here, like last time we listened to RAP, we watched the RAP, and that would count, for example. So please log those in. Those hours can be recreated if need be, because the clerk's office maintains copies of the agendas going back forever. So please keep track of those hours and submit them to chair. That's important. The next thing I want to talk about along those same lines is ride-alongs. As, again, Mr. Moore highlighted, although he didn't highlight this, but he wrote it. It's under his number one. Ride-alongs are recommended. One ride-along per quarter. You've heard me talk about that before. So I'm making this as easy as I can. Because I don't think many of you are doing this. So I would encourage you, I have given you the information, if you'd like to do an operating division, there is a substation, there is a phone number to contact, and you're going to ask for the first sergeant. First sergeant's name is listed accordingly, so you can ask for Sergeant Fipont, Sergeant Travers, Sergeant Parrish, Sergeant Bustamante, depending on which side of town you'd like to do your hours. Please make an appointment to get that done as soon as you can. It's recommended by ordinance, and certainly I think it's going to give you a better sense of how you're going to be able to do your jobs. So I give you that as well. Next month, you're going to be getting some training on communication systems through public safety communications. And I spoke with some of those folks over there. They would be thrilled to give you a tour of their communication system where calls come in, and you can see what will be described to you next week. You can actually see them in operation if you'd like to do that. They have a meeting room there if you'd like, and you can have a future meeting out at the Como if you prefer. So that's an opportunity to think about, certainly available to you as well.
Would we coordinate that with you if we were to have our meeting in October out there?
I'll set it up for you, absolutely.
Okay.
Or you can. Frank Ortiz will be here to give a talk next time. He's a supervisor out there.
Okay.
He'd be happy to set it up for you as well.
Okay, just in case Ward 6 isn't available.
Right. Okay. Or, I mean, you can do it in conjunction with the tour. I mean, it's, instead of a training, you can have them walk you through for half an hour, like you do your training, and then go meet in the room. Get it done on the same day as well. So it's just something else to think about. Bill Ricketts is being very humble, and he's also being a little quiet today. But the reason he's being quiet, because I know he's put a lot of work into this. He's reviewed the cases and such, but he has not yet completed the 80 hours. But he's really close. I mean, I've never seen anybody do it that quickly. So he is like one weekend away from being able to say he's got the 80 hours in. So the expectation is that he will be done by next meeting. So by next meeting, he should be able to participate. And even though he's quiet right now, once you wind him up and start him off, good luck. Anybody have any questions? Everybody good?
Did you have a question, Bill?
Yeah, I think my last day for outdoors, gatherings next week.
You go for an operations division west.
You look like somebody out there.
That's all right. He must be good looking.
He was.
Okay.
He looked just like he was just wasn't as clean.
Okay.
I have one last thing to share, if I could. I deal with complaints, as do you. And you listen to people complain all the time. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's difficult. But every now and then you get surprised by something, so I wanted to share it. I wrote this email to TPD, to Captain and Deputy Chief, Chief Deputy and chief of police and city manager. I just turned this in this week. This past Saturday, as part of my job as IPA, I attended a homeless outreach at the New Spirit Lutheran Church, 8701 East Old Spanish Trail. Usually I hear complaints about perceived unprofessional treatment by TPD officers, not all unsustained. I need to share one particular story from this past Saturday. A homeless by choice man told me that he had been sitting under a large shade tree on a desert lot near the Quick Mart near Broadway and Camino Seco. He saw a marked unit pull into the lot, so he got up, grabbed his bicycle, and began to walk away. The unit pulled up behind him, and the officer called out to him. The homeless fellow thought, here we go again, and he was about to be harassed, as he had been countless times before. He stopped, turned, and saw the officer exit his vehicle and open his rear door, motioning for the homeless man to approach the vehicle. The homeless man was convinced that he was about to be put in the back seat, location with which he was all too familiar. As he approached the car, the officer reached into the vehicle and handed the homeless man a bottle of cold water, telling him to have a good day. The officer then drove off. Needless to say, the homeless man was beyond shocked and speechless. He never did get the officer's name. That man shared this story with several other homeless individuals who were equally surprised. Such a simple, small gesture of humanity has had profound, far-reaching, positive effects. So I wanted to share that story with you. That's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you. So item number 8, CPAR vacancies. As Mitch had alluded to, Bill Rickett, he was appointed by Ward 5. And I believe you took the oath and you will be able to start voting on the cases as soon as you've completed all of your hours, which that's right not too long from now. So hopefully that'll be done in time for our September 19th meeting. And then I'd also like to introduce Carlos Portillo. My intent is to make a motion to select Carlos as a member for a 2-year term. Carlos, do you have anything you'd like to
say? As an advisory member?
As an advisory member, yes, sir.
So that was one of the questions. My name is Carlos Portillo. Can I give him a quick bio?
Yes, please.
I was born and raised here in Sutton. Live in Menlo Park. Pretty much lived all my life in Menlo Park. Ward 1. 61 years old. I retired early. My parents are at Nesma. We get the full people. She did. And Hispanic. My dad's from Chihuahua. My mom is from Tucson. Her father's from Chihuahua. Her mother's from Mazatlan. Went to South Point, graduated in 80, went to the U of A late, but I still did get my degree. I have a son in Flagstaff, Arizona, Mario Fernet. He will be 31 this year. I'm married to Rachel Guante, retired City of Tucson employee. Currently still working for the city as a retired person. I retired early. I'll take care of my dad. He's been having lots of surgeries. I'm lucky to go to Bill with 88 and that'll be 90 in October. I'm the youngest of 4. My sister got a out as a PhD, Workforce for Life in San Francisco, and now is moving back from Connecticut, from Yale. She moved back to town with her husband, and her boy graduated, my godson, from Santa Clara. Neto, my eldest brother, retired columnist from the Star. But currently works for Housing, where I retired from. He's their, what do you call it, were they? He's their outreach person. He writes for the, can't remember the name of the title. And, so he's back working, he's also retired, but he's working he's working full time, but probably just another couple more years. My other brother, older than me, my Spadio, and he's a retired TPD officer, spent about 25 years with TPD. He retired a number of years back and, you know, brought up Hispanic, brought up a sense of community by my parents. My My dad owned the Spanish language radio station for most of his life, two of them, three of them. And he's, like I said, he's retired, and he's moving on. He's got Alzheimer's, so I retired at 56. I work part-time at that Bach distillery. I have plenty of time to help out. Still want to help out the community. I spent 21 years in the city of Tucson. 15 years were in code enforcement. I was a supervisor of code enforcement for a long time. Retired from housing. Spent 6 years there after I left code. And wife worked 34 years for budget, for the city of Tucson. Everybody in our family, a lot of our family, her family, my family, spent a lot of time working. Many of our lives are spent working for the county or the city. So we know what it means to serve. So that's me. I'm here to help if you want my help.
Thank you, Carlos. So do I need to officially make a motion to select him as an advisory member? And do I have a second?
Sure.
Thank you. Do we have a first and a second?
So moved.
Mitaleo?
So moved.
Oh, all right. Kate Calhoun?
Aye.
Martha?
Aye.
Thank you.
I'm going to, just so you know, I'm going to be getting a new knee next month, so I'll be out. Hopefully can do a lot of the paperwork and whatnot. But I get a new knee in September, mid-September, so I'll be out watching lots of college football on TV. But just, you know, I'll be out for a little bit.
I can get your name right away to the training folks to get you signed up and ready to vote for the hour program.
Yes.
If you have any questions, ask Craig at CCDX.
Yeah, so I'll do it.
That's great. Any future agenda items? I think we've got training next month. I have a preference to stay here next month because I've got another big concert that I've got to scoot off to, and it's very convenient that it's here. And then perhaps we take a tour the following, if 4 degrees.
Only if you get tickets.
Ringo Starr sold out. What?
Say what?
Say what? Yeah. Tonight, Chicago. So we got Chicago tonight on the 19th. We've got Ringo Starr. So make a motion to adjourn. Woohoo. I second that. Okay. Shout.
Thank you. Thank
Feel
you.
Better.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care. Mask up.